any kind of thinking with memory, it's not I. It's only memory of that which has appeared before. We think of that which has happened and appears, not that which hasn't happened, because we cannot think about that. It's the way of life, the way of Dhamma. That's why Buddha used the word Dhamma for everything, because they have their own characteristics. Seeing sees, hearing hears, that are in samsara, only once in samsara, never the same, never arise again, completely. Yeah. This is the truth. Yeah.
Chan, I just heard one word is samsara. We just think about the samsara, but how we can understand correctly the word of samsara in the sense of reality?
Samsara is the succession of the arising and falling away of reality, non-stop. From seeing to hearing to thinking, 6 days, always, all the time. No one can stop the arising of citta, cetasika, and rupa, because each is conditioned by its proper condition.
But because the reality is the citta is the rise and falls very fast, so we cannot realize it now. So we almost forget and don't understand anything about the samsara.
No one can do anything, because who can change the characteristic of realities? Seeing arises to see and then falls away instantly. You cannot keep it, cannot hold it at all. It's gone completely. When there is attachment to seeing which is gone, because of memory things that is still there. But actually, each reality is different. They cannot be the same one at all. Just one moment of seeing, it arises, it sees, and it falls away, never to arise again, succeeded by another one. It seems like seeing sees all the time, but actually so many, many moments, uncountable seeing, with other types of citta. That is hearing about reality, but who experienced this? The enlightened one. So he taught us what he has enlightened about that which no one can experience like that, but can be understood little by little until there is the understanding of reality as not self, but not as one citta comprised of 7 cetasikas by way of different conditions. That's not our ability to understand that. But from hearing, it doesn't mean that we have to understand such, but to understand as much as possible, like now. Seeing arises. If it does not arise, there is no seeing. And seeing does not stay, because at moment of hearing, it's not seeing. And there are thinking processes in between, so many, many processes. And one can understand that how much ignorance one has or is accumulated at the moment of beginning to understand the teachings of the Buddha about this moment, completely gone. No hearing, and then hearing, and then no hearing again. But before sound has completely gone, there's attachment to it with ignorance, unknowingly. Because usually in a day, one is attached to whatever is experienced to any Dhavi. At moment of seeing, there's attachment to seeing and that which is seen. At moment of hearing, there's attachment to hearing and sound. So in there is attachment to what is seen, heard, smelled, tasted, touched, thought about. And now it's time to begin to hear about realities, and right understanding begins without hearing. Who can think about realities as they are, as of self? And by then one can understand what's meant by Kanti Parami, patience. It takes long, long time to understand each reality as it is. Otherwise, it is the object of clinging and wrong understanding, which takes it for something permanent right now.
I think it's a very important point that Ajahn says. One can understand how much ignorance there is, because at first one may think there is ignorance, but then more and more one can realize how much, to what extent.
Because Panya understands, not you. Before knowing, it is I who do not understand. It's I who have ignorance. But at moment of understanding, how much is there ignorance, that is Panya, which begins to understand intellectually, until even ignorance can be object of right understanding as a reality. Like lopa, see? We talk about lopa, attachment, but there is lopa until it appears as the object of right understanding, as no self, no thing in it, only a reality which is attached.
But understanding ignorance is really hard, because it is ignorance, not knowing. So understanding, not knowing, is...
But from hearing, it begins.
It can begin, yeah. Yes.
If there is idea that, oh, it's so very difficult for me, then it's attachment.
Attachment, yeah.
And it's delirious thinking.
Delirious thinking, yeah.
You mentioned Kanti Parami. So I read that Kanti can be led by virya, or by adosa, or by panya. Would you please tell us more about this?
Because nothing can arise alone. There must be other realities arising with it. Cetasikas arises with citta and other cetasika.
But the reality that we call Kanti itself can have different predominant characteristic at a time, right?
Not at a time, because, for example, those who observe sila and have dana, but do not understand dhamma, no hearing on dhamma at all, and those who listen and have some understanding of dhamma, at moment of observing sila, it does mean that the person who has listened, giving or observing sila with understanding. It depends on occasion and other conditions too. But since there is then the hearing and some understanding of reality, which is different from those who haven't heard at all, so it depends on that moment. But the understanding of reality is not lost. So no matter there is moment of understanding, at moment of giving or observing sila or not, it doesn't matter at all. But Panya sees the difference. So we cannot think about what conditions such virya or kanti at that very moment. Each moment depends on whether it's there or not. Otherwise, it's just thinking about what conditions it, whether it's a dosa or a lopa or what. It's not like understand the characteristic of that moment as not me or not I. This is more important. Otherwise, it takes one away from understanding whatever appears again and again. This is a trap of lobha. One is trapped by ignorance and attachment whenever there is no understanding.
And lobha can be trapped also by not wanting to be in the trap.
Because you see that it's so very crafty. Only panya knows.
Just to fill you in, this subject came up this morning, so that's why we were discussing the same thing about wanting to know more particulars about the reality of the present moment rather than just understanding it.
And we also had a little bit of discussion, I forget if it was yesterday or when, but when there's trying to work it out, actually there is a little bit of wrong practice at that time, because at that moment it's not understanding that dharmas are conditioned. There is the idea behind it that thinking can work it out, not understanding that whatever way of thinking or whatever understanding arises is by conditions. So there is self behind it, however subtly at that moment. So we discuss this in a little bit of detail. Otherwise, as Jan was saying, easy to be led astray again and again.
Panya works very, very hard before there can be clear understanding of any reality, because it's covered up by attachment and ignorance. How thick it is.
Ajahn, I just overheard you saying to Gabby about talking about seeing comes, no seeing at all, then it arises and then it falls away. And after the discussion this morning, Heng was not quite sure about what you were asking when you asked her what is there before seeing. And I think you would like Ajahn to clarify. Would you like to just repeat your question?
This morning, Ajahn asked me about what before seeing. I couldn't answer her. Now I would like to ask Ajahn. Normally, Ajahn emphasis about seeing as seeing, but seeing before seeing, maybe the characteristics of reality or nimitta, I'm not sure. Would you play more detail?
It depends on one's understanding. For example, if one is asked what is there before seeing, one may say hearing or thinking and so on, but actually nothing is there at all. It has to be bhavanka moment before any experience through any dharma. And Buddha taught in detail about what citta arises after that and that and that, but as much as one can understand is that before seeing, there's no seeing, right? We don't have to think too much. But before seeing, there is no seeing. When seeing arises, it's gone. Before other things appear, like now hearing is not seeing. So we can think about reality right now to understand, begin to understand, even not in details. But begin to understand that before seeing arises, since it does not arise yet, how can there be seeing? But as soon as seeing is there, it means that seeing has arisen. It sees, and not all the time, because there is other reality, like hearing and thinking. But we do not understand the citta, which keeps on arising and falling away in succession. What citta is there, one after another? But we can begin to understand that seeing is not hearing. And if seeing is still there, sound cannot appear. Only visible object can appear, because seeing still sees. So how can the other object appear? But reality is not like it seems to be, because the rapidity of the arising and falling away of realities is so very, very rapidly. Even right now, we think of seeing as the same one a moment ago, but actually never be the same. Like the magician, see, he plays magic or trick. Very skillful, but not as skillful as citta and cetasika and realities. Because there is the idea of a magician. Citta arises and falls away so many, many times, uncountable. So life is like this. Without the enlightenment of the Buddha, no one knows about realities at all. But it takes time to listen and think about it carefully, whether it's true or not, because it has to be the right understanding of the listener, not the one who speaks, but the one who hears, to think about it, consider the truth, whether it's true or not. Like seeing arises. If it does not arise, there is no seeing. But as soon as it arises, what one does not know is that it falls away immediately, followed by other citta, which are unknown. What can be known is only attachment or aversion to that object which is seen. But it's not the same object which arises, and it's not the same seeing which sees. What appears is only the nimitta, the image of that which arises and falls away as something permanent.
Seeing before seeing, it can happen, the world very dark.
You talk about darkness?
Yeah.
Okay. Without seeing, everything is in darkness. Only one reality which is not dark is visible object. The seeing itself is dark. No shape, no form, no color at all. It arises and it sees or experiences an object in darkness. So the truth of the world, of reality, is not as light as it appears every day, but actually so dark, because citta arises in darkness at moment of birth. Bhavanka, hearing, and so on, only the moment of seeing that it's not dark. The object is not dark, but the seeing is dark.
Ajahn, how about if someone practiced the samatha meditation, they go into the jhana, they can see the pavanga citta?
That we underestimate the teachings of the Buddha so much, because we just go across every word and thought that we understand. But in order to understand only one word of the enlightened one, one can see the difference between ignorance and the great virtues of understanding. So it takes time to really understand each word, like samatha. What is it? So if one begins to understand what is it, one cannot just tell by one's own thought or thinking about it, But one has to read or listen wisely, carefully. What is it? Because someone would say that I practice. What is practice?
Practice means doing something bad or good.
Doing something?
Yeah.
Something? I don't know what something is. Who knows what something is?
Make the mind calm.
Can you?
No.
So,
no.
What is practice?
Not understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Because practice, we can practice everything. Not one thing.
No understanding. So each word of the Buddha contains or brings about right understanding, depending on how much one understands it. For example, Dhamma, he didn't say grass or water or sujin or sara, but Dhamma, what is it? Whatever is real. For example, there is seeing right now. Seeing is seeing. It cannot be anything at all. It cannot be a man, a girl, Russian, British, dog, cat, snake. Seeing is seeing. No matter here or under the water or wherever, up on the sky, in heaven, seeing is seeing. That is Dhamma. Whatever is real, it has its own characteristic, its own conditions for its arising. It performs its function. It arises and falls away. This is common to all conditioned realities. Never stay long at all. So whatever appears is a Dhamma. Sound is a Dhamma. Hearing is a Dhamma. Thinking is a Dhamma. But we would say everything is Dhamma. But what everything is Dhamma? Is this Dhamma? Hardness of table? See? So even Dhamma needs more and more consideration to really understand its characteristic as no one. If it is something, it's not Dhamma. Only when it has its own characteristic, arising and falling away, no one can change its characteristic at all. Sound is sound. It's a Dhamma. Pleasant feeling is pleasant feeling. It's a Dhamma. So by understanding whatever appears by its own characteristic, it's the beginning of understanding that is real. It's only a reality which is experienced. Nothing in it, like touching this, at moment of touching, heart is real. Not a table, not a chair, not my arms or my hand.
But people think about understanding reality very hard because they don't have the wisdom. They have practiced step by step, like doing the whole samai or sila, and the sila, the first step, and then the next step, they can have the samadhi practice, and until they reached about wisdom. Wisdom can go first. What about
each word is not understood at all. What is sila?
Sila at moment understanding about no one doing something.
In Tipitaka, there is the terms or the words akusala sila, akusala sila, kusala sila, apayagata sila. Can rupa be sila?
No.
So what is sila?
every moment of citta.
That's it. So at this moment, there is citta, right? So what sila is it?
The moment understanding by condition.
Now.
Yeah. Mm.
Now. What kind of sila is there?
Understanding about nature of rupa.
So what kind of sila at moment of understanding?
Kusala sila. Kusala citta sila.
If we haven't heard this, can we understand about sila?
No.
See,
no, not at all.
So what about practice sila?
Say again, please.
Whoever think that there must be the practicing of sila. So is there any understanding of sila?
But the way people think...
No, we don't mind about the others at all, but because actually one lives alone, one is born alone, one dies alone, and one experiences reality alone.
Right.
So it's not the matter of the others at all.
I understand that.
Yeah,
I understand.
Mm-hmm. So what is light and darkness?
Okay. Light is appearing. Right? It appears to what?
To eye consciousness.
Okay. Is thy consciousness light?
I don't know. By theory, you know that.
At moment of hearing, is there any consciousness?
Yes.
Is it light or dark?
By theory, we know that it's dark.
No, you don't need any theory. Just hear. At moment of hearing, close your eyes because seeing is not hearing.
I'm just confused about the meaning of darkness and light in the conventional way, and whether is it conventional or...
If we don't use any word like light at all, what is seen?
Visible
even
object.
Even in dark room, it's visible object. Mm-hmm. And one knows that darkness, which is seen, is not the same as lightness at all, right? Even in dark room, they're seeing, but it's not like when
now.
Like now. So seeing is not the light or the darkness, but seeing itself has no shape, no form, no smell, no taste, no visible object, because visible object is a rupa. It cannot experience anything. All rupas cannot experience. So if we don't use the word citta or cetasika, we talk about just the moment of experiencing. There must be a reality which is now experience, an object. Whatever appears is experienced by citta, the faculty of experiencing, and that faculty of experiencing has no light in it, because light is rupa. It cannot experience anything. So when we talk about the absolute quality of a reality, the experience itself is not light. It cannot be seen. Whenever it arises, it experiences. So imagine when it's not seeing and visible object, one lives in the dark world. If other objects like sound appear, smell appear, taste appear, tangible object appears, and thinking thing in darkness.
You know, like when you're in the dark room, or when we close our eyes, we can see that there are thinking, there are hearing.
No, just one doorway at a time.
Okay, there can be thinking.
No, seeing or thinking.
In the dark room?
Yes.
If you close our eyes, mm-hmm. there is thinking.
And open one's eyes?
We say it's dark.
Because the object is not light enough
mm-hmm.
to be known. But it's still the object of seeing. So seeing itself, mm-hmm. which experiences completely dark.
Mm-hmm. So you mean that when we talk about light, it's part of what you call the visible object?
No matter you call it, it is seen.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So for example, in a dark room where almost nothing is seen, so visible object is seen and just a very little light with it. But so that little bit of light is an aspect of what is seen. And then come outside and a moment of seeing now and the visible object is very light. But at a moment of hearing, no light at all. A moment of thinking, no light at all. So the degree of light is an aspect of visible object only. But the rest of the time, every other world is in complete darkness. And even in the dim room, like at night time when one's trying to make one's way to the bathroom, still the visible object is a little bit light, still light appearing. But as soon as seeing's fallen away, no light appears at all.
Even right now, close your eyes. Is there seeing? Really? Really? Really?
See, they're still seeing.
It depends the attention, where the attention is placed.
It depends on conditions.
When one closes one's eyes, there can be moments of seeing. There's still a little bit of light appearing. So the visible object is still a little bit light, just like in the middle of the night when one's walking to the bathroom at that moment.
But still, the experiencing, the citta and citta-sika, is darker than anything else. The darkest. Because if one closes one's eyes, it seems dark. In the dark room, it looks dark, but the citta which experiences is darker.
It's like also if someone is almost blind, or what we conventionally call blind, and maybe 90% blind, actually is still seeing, still moments of seeing, because not completely blind, even though very little light.
Have you been practicing?
Every moment, seeing, see visible object, hearing, hear the sound, touching, harness, cold, heat, softness, thinking, just five senses, and the mind are working all the time.
So what is meant by practicing?
I asked because now all the world very popular practicing meditation. I just asked for curious, not wanting to practice meditation, because
so,
now very popular meditation.
Yeah, it indicates that people underestimate the teachings of the Buddha so much. Think that it's easy, just one can understand at moment of hearing or reading, but actually it's not at all. It's not like that. Even one word, Dhamma, there can be the intellectual understanding of whatever appears, whatever is real, is Dhamma, a reality. It's only remembering the meaning and the word, but not at moment of experiencing. So it takes time to develop right understanding from intellectual understanding to be direct experience by conditions.
Hung, you said at lunchtime that you wish to follow on the discussion we had this morning about how, for example, like now we're discussing the Dharma, and we talked about how moments, there are moments of kusala and moments of akusala. And just now we were talking about the meaning of sila as the behavior of citta. So like now, there are moments of kusala sila, moments of akusala sila. Sometimes the moments of kusala condition speech, or the moments of akusala condition speech or bodily behavior. But how is it possible to know anything about what is sila or what is kusala or akusala if there is no understanding of Dharma or Dharmas now? Because if there is no understanding, then we just assume at this time they are all kusala cheetahs. At another time, like when we go shopping, they're all akusala citta, or we think it is my kusala or my akusala. So I think, as Ajahn said, we usually underestimate the teachings of the Buddha. We think we can just say, oh, if we go to the temple or we do this or that, it's kusala, or but if we do something else, it's not. But actually, the understanding has to be now of whatever appears, like you said, seeing or hearing moments of kusala or akusala. We can't just assume from the circumstance that it's kusala sila or akusala sila, or kusala citta or akusala citta. Would you agree?
I think if we understanding about sila or akusala or kusala, we must listen in the Dhamma by Buddha teaching first about reality arises every moment and pass away. No one doing something sila or wholesome mind or akusala. With understanding firmly by listening and considering about nature of wholesome mind or unwholesome mind, until banya development every moment to understanding what is the sila citta, or what is the unwholesome mind, citta. Because we normally doing something with I do the dana, I do the dana for make the merit to people. I have the wholesome mind, but the Buddha teaching talking about no one can do, only the reality. No one can do only by condition, Dhamma. For me, I just understanding about...
Anyone practice sila?
No.
Because so there is no practice of sila?
No. Before I have not understanding about Buddha teaching about sila, I have the same problem with doing something wholesome mind. But until I listened Ajahn talk for many times and repeated about wholesome mind or unwholesome mind without understanding, can do the sila. Now I understand more about Buddha talking about no one can do wholesome mind, no one can practice sila until banya development for high level.
This morning you also mentioned, when we were having a chat, one other point which we didn't discuss this morning, and that was about concentration. We were talking about how concentration, ekagata, arises with each citta, and you mentioned that you thought there can be direct understanding of concentration at moment of seeing or now. Would you like to say a bit more about your understanding of concentration?
I understand about concentration, ekagata, with arises with citta. They are citta-sika, not concentration. They arises by many citta-sika at one at a time. Sometimes they arises with, for example, seeing visible object, and the ekagata working with citta, and arises same time, and banya can understand. By time, banya can recognize what is the reality arises and pass away. I just think about, but I'm not sure. I think if banya can understand, no doubt at the time, the ekagata arises and part away, banya can understand and no doubt at the time. How about idea? I don't know.
What Heng was just suggesting is because ekagata arises with each citta, and that there can be direct understanding, like now when panya arises, of that ekagata at the moment of seeing, and that it can be known now.
Each reality which is the experiencing arises to perform its own function. Citta cannot remember, it cannot attach to anything at all. But the faculty of citta is just experiences the object when it arises. So the other reality is not citta, but each cittasika arising together with a certain citta performs its function, like sanya cannot feel, and the vedana cannot remember, and ekagata is that which is one-pointedness, just one, pointed at the object. That's why citta cannot experience two objects at the same time. This is the function of ekagata citta-sika, which arises with each citta. But when citta experiences one object more and more, longer and longer, the characteristic of one object appear, that is what we call concentration. Right? Because concentration is one-pointedness on just one object for a long time, but it doesn't mean that that moment there is no seeing, hearing. But usually the object of citta changes from time to time by conditions. But the moment when panya is wise enough to see what object condition kusala and what object condition akusala. So it is the function of panya to know what object will condition right peace or kusala, like metta or marana or whatever. For example, who knows when will be death moment? It can be now or 1 hour later. So the best thing, the most valuable thing in life is the moment of understanding reality. Because one cannot take anything along with oneself, no matter one have great wealth or whatever one likes, but as soon as the moment the jutti citta arises and falls away, one kamma, only kamma, which comprises other kamma, to be able to condition vipaka in that particular life after death, is there, ready to succeed the death consciousness. So we don't know which one after death of this life, because we have done so many karmas in this life and other life, but one karma is ready to perform the function of rebirth or birth after death. So at that moment, the best thing in life is understanding reality as it is. Not underestimate any word like peace or kusala or practice, because without understanding, it's not any development at all. Because avijja doesn't need any development, it's there all the time. Attachment doesn't need development, it's there. It has its own condition to arise very fast. As long as seeing is there and the citta experiences the object, even when the object hasn't fallen away yet, attachment is there. Who knows? So it arises by conditions from moment to moment, from moment to moment. So panya, which knows what moment can, what object can condition right understanding or calm, and so it conditioned that moment of calm or right understanding. No one can do that. No one can have it at will.
Question was with regard to whether there can be direct understanding of ekagata now at the moment of seeing, and I was saying that it may seem like we may be very focused on lifting the glass or something, so or at this moment of seeing, but actually it's just thinking about concentration or ekagata.
I think I not meaning about focus something one object. No, just happening by condition. Ekagata arises, no doubt. One pointless. Not focus something. When visible object.
We know from theory that ekagata arises at each moment, but is it really known at this moment? Is it really understood?
No, not when they arise by condition, not now.
So panya arises and develops little by little from intellectual understanding before it can be a moment of direct understanding of a reality right now. So if there are any question whether how to understand any particular reality, it's not the understanding of reality. It has to be intellectual understanding in the beginning.
I think I not asking about how. I'm not thinking about
so
how.
It's not,
I think that
sometimes we underestimate what sati and panya, what direct sati and panya really know or understand. So, for example, we may read now about how at a moment of seeing, passa arises, sanya arises, ekagata arises, jivitindriya, any of the seven universal chetasikas arise. And it may seem that at this moment there can be direct understanding of these chetasikas, but actually it's just thinking about it, not really the direct understanding of passa or sanya or ekagata.
So the question is, who understands reality right now as it is, as of self?
Banya. Banya.
But I ask about who. Banya is right, because you see that without banya, nothing can understand anything as it is at all. But it is intellectual understanding or direct understanding. So the question is, who can experience reality directly? You said panya, but it has to be the developed panya, not only the intellectual panya.
Develop panya. The factor of panya.
The moment of understanding arises and falls away. It develops from moment to moment of understanding, to understand better and clearer. Panya develops, not anyone can develop panya.
And like Nina was saying earlier, when panya develops, it begins to understand just how much avijja there is, how much ignorance there is. Most of the time, no understanding. So like now, countless moments of seeing, but nothing known about seeing, nothing known about ekagata, even intellectually, nothing known about sanya, and then occasionally thinking about these mental factors because we've heard about them. So a little bit of intellectual understanding, but it has to develop and develop before it can be the direct understanding. And then earlier, I think you mentioned about the arising and falling away of these dharmas, but this is very highly developed direct understanding of realities. So I think that the path of understanding is really about the path of seeing how much ignorance there really is, so little actually known at this moment.
Earlier you said that panya understands what object conditions come. So were you referring to the samatha bhavana when you said that?
It depends on what level of understanding. If it's a samatha bhavana, that person know what is the object of samatha. And for vipassana bhavana, panya knows what is the object of panya, of vipassana.
So if you talk about samatha bhavana, when the panya knows what object conditions come, it can conditions more thinking about that object again and again, right? Touching the object again and again?
No expectation at all, because panya, which understand the moment of peace of kusala, knows that whatever level of kusala is peaceful. Because even samatha cannot, even samatha bhavana cannot be developed with attachment.
I understand, Ajahn, to mean that when the object is there and the citta is kusala, then panya knows that that object is supporting, if you like, the kusala. It's not a matter of, if there's contemplation about object X, then that will be kusala. But it's just at the moment of kusala that it is known that the object is favorable for calm.
I think another trap that it's very easy to fall into, because, for example, one, like you mentioned earlier, one hears about common objects that can be daily reflections, that can be conditioned for calm in daily life, like now by conditions or maybe reflection on death and how it may come at any moment, or reflection on moments of metta or some other common object, or reflecting on the virtues of the Buddha naturally by conditions. And you have talked a lot about this topic, about how even when we reflect on the moment of the virtues of the Buddha, like now, and the great wisdom that cannot be imagined, actually it's conditioned for calm. But then people have the idea that that means they should make a point of thinking about the virtues of the Buddha, or reflecting on death, or maybe setting a time aside for this in order to develop calm. And I think the trap is again of self wanting to do something or wanting to practice, and then it is motivated by lobha, deliberately reflecting on the virtues of the Buddha or on death in order for calmness to arise and develop, not the natural kusala reflection in daily life that you refer to. Would you say?
I didn't ask about like doing that deliberately. I just wanted to ask about whether that's naturally it conditioned more that in that way.
Like now this morning, there were one or two topics of discussion that related to death, and there may be reflection on how there are just various cheetahs, and then at the end of this life, everything from this life completely forgotten, all the people that are so dear to us completely forgotten. And at the moment of reflecting, it may be conditioned for kusala citta and calm, or it may be a condition for worry and happiness. So it's actually not the topic so much as the way of reflection. And if one even a little thinks, okay, reflect and have calm, then again it's wrong practice. But at this moment of reflecting, how life is very, very short and death can come any moment, and then everything we hold dear, completely lost, no thought anymore about the people we're so attached to in this life. Actually, the citta at that moment is calm, but I think that is what is meant by very naturally.
And I think to answer your question more directly, if there's banya that sees that the object is favourable for calm because of the way it's being contemplated, then it's a condition for that reflection to occur again. But when it may occur, one doesn't know. So it may be then and there that the reflection would continue, but it may be that something else intervenes, and who knows? Yes, it would be a condition for further reflection at some time or other.
Like the discussion this morning and the reflection on that point by Patupa Nisiyapachya is conditioned to reflect now again on that point, and maybe again, but maybe not, just depending on accumulations at that time. But very naturally, just entirely by conditions.
And all depends on right understanding. For example, at moment of dosa, it's not calm, right? And any moment of kusala, no matter it's sila or dana or bhavana, whatever, it's calm. So panya can understand that when citta is kusala, it's calm, but no control. But by understanding and seeing the difference between moment of calm and not calm, then Panya develops by itself to see the danger of akusla and see the value of kusla, but still uncontrollable. That's why Panya works on its way very, very subtly at any moment when it arises. So anyone who just want to be calm is wrong, because that is attachment. But the understanding of understanding moment of kusala as calm, then it can condition more kusala instead of wanting to have calm. So all depends on right understanding and the craftiness of lopa. What will win at that very moment, the lopa or right understanding? Because nobody can say that kusala is not calm. Kusala is calm.
So what we were saying about Panya and the object and further reflection and so forth, that applies to any moment of kusala, and not just the 40 samatha objects. So if there is Panya, and that is... Yes? Yeah.
And this was in the back of my mind to a little discussion on DSG at the moment. These daily reflections are development of metta, perception of repulsiveness, mindfulness of death, and excellent qualities of the Buddha. So we know about these daily reflections as taught by the Buddha. And one friend wrote that he remembers these truths often in a natural way, but from now on, he has decided he will make the recollections in a more intentional way while sitting quietly with his coffee, because he thinks it will encourage more samvega. And another friend said, oh yes, and this is what Ajahn wrote in Deeds of Merit. Which subjects among the 40 subjects do you think we should recollect in our daily life? Which subjects are suitable as condition for the development of calm with the purpose of subduing defilements? This is another level of kusala besides the levels of dana, generosity, and sila. The monks are accustomed to practice continuously for a long time four meditation subjects of samatha in order to have calm of citta and to subdue defilements which can disturb them. Lay people can also practice these four meditation subjects. The Dhamma and the Vinaya, which the monks practice, can also be applied by lay followers in their own situation as a means of subduing defilements. This is from an old book, so they read this as making it sound like you're suggesting that these four daily subjects should be practiced even by lay people to subdue defilements.
Book.
Deeds of Merit.
By Suchin Boran.
By Suchin, okay. And then there's an interview, and then W says, what are these four meditation subjects? And S. Suchin says, recollection of the excellent qualities of the Buddha, development of metta, perception of repulsiveness, and mindfulness of death. We can recollect the wisdom of the Buddha by which he attained enlightenment. We can recollect the purity of the Buddha who completely eradicated all defilements. We can recollect the great compassion of the Buddha who taught the Dharma in manifold ways with the purpose of helping all living beings. At the moment we recollect the excellent qualities of the Buddha, there is kusala citta with calm, which is free from defilements, because we do not think of other things which can cause the arising of defilements. The citta which recollects the qualities of the Buddha is pure, and it is inclined to practice the Dharma as it has been taught by the Buddha. At such moments, the citta is gentle. One will not hurt or harm someone else. There is metta and benevolence. One wishes happiness for everybody. When we are developing the inclination to metta and benevolence for others, we should take care not to be absorbed in pleasant objects.
We can prevent this by considering the foulness of the body, both of ourselves and of others. If we neglect considering this, we may go the wrong way and have attachment and infatuation instead of pure loving kindness.
What do you think about that?
I think that it's very easy to read with the idea of someone following a practice and deliberately recollecting the Buddha's qualities and deliberately trying to have more metta.
So it's wrong.
So I think it's not right, yeah. I can understand why someone quoted it in this context, because it sounds too much like following a practice. You think it's wrong too?
It's wrong. No matter who say it, it's wrong.
Especially in the beginning when it talks about practicing, or and that when we reflect in this way, it's kusala, because as we discussed, who can say when one reflects on death that it's kusala? So one has to be careful, I think.
Yeah, as Khundung, then to check from what page and what about place, yeah? Without right understanding, it's impossible to have peace to that degree of developing peace of mind up to the degree of jhana. Even right now, who knows what moment is kusala and what moment is akusala? If that is not known, no way to develop higher moment of peace. It's only wanting to be peaceful, but to know that this moment is kusala and the other moment is akusala, it will bring more kusala moment. That's why the five hindrances must be known by the person who has right understanding of peace enough to develop more and more peaceful. Because in a day, only those who see the danger of attachment of whatever appears in a day can develop peace of mind from moment to moment. Because of understanding it, this moment is akusala. It's not kusala. So without right understanding, how can that person know the difference between the two? But by understanding, that person knows that at what moment it is kusala. So there can be condition for seeing the danger of akusala and have more kusala when whatever object appears.
And I think this is a good example of how actually one has to really consider each word for oneself and not just accept or read anything, because actually it's only when there is understanding that one is not led astray by the words, no matter in the Tipitaka or anywhere else, or even something that Ajahn says, one has to really consider what is right and remember that it has to be about Dharma Sitta Anatta.
So when talking about the hindrances, does that refer to any level of akusala or only the coarse ones?
Any level.
Any level.
Yeah. Do we now understand the danger of attachment to whatever appears right now? See, the understanding of moment of kusala and akusala. So how can kusala develop? It has to be with understanding only, no matter samatha or vipassana.
And I think we tend to have an idea that the strong agusala is more dangerous than the subtle agusala. For example, dosa and strong attachment. So we don't appreciate the danger of things like wrong view, which can be very subtle and lead us to wrong practice.
But wrong view is not a hindrance for samatha bhavana, isn't it?
that would be right.
Because you see that at moment of understanding is peaceful. Why not have more peaceful from understanding more and more? See? Why thinking about having other kind of peace instead of understanding anytime is peaceful right then. No need to look for other kind of peace.
Dom, any understanding of when it is kusala or akusala now?
No. Because we discussed this.
There was a topic you'd like to discuss this afternoon, and that was about the extending merit to someone who has passed away, and how if a name is mentioned, then the conditions to think in the wrong way. And you mentioned about the Without the Walls Sutta, and Bimbisara didn't mention names of the relatives and they screeched. Would you like to say a little more? I think you were discussing it with her.
So again, it can be this akusala and wrong understanding or with right understanding. But for me personally, to extend merit, I feel it is better to extend merit just to all beings who can appreciate and not mention special names, because it, for me, it is a condition to think with attachment to a person, to a dear person.
Actually, it's to anyone who can understand, yeah, can know about the kusala. But if there is someone that you think he's so kind to you and he might think about your kusala moment and appreciate it, so you can mention the name of that person. Especially because for that person to appreciate.
Yeah.
Because we don't know who will appreciate or not. But for the dear one or the one who is so kind to you in your life, yeah, and that person knows that you have done such wholesome deeds, and you have thought about him, still think about his kindness,
yes,
so he might appreciate because you do not forget to think about him, to extend the merit for him to appreciate.
Yeah, but but we have no idea, we don't know at all whether he can appreciate.
If only if he could.
If he could, yeah.
I think perhaps Nina's point maybe a little bit that, like this morning, you were emphasizing very strongly that when someone has passed away, everything in this life, everyone remembered, everything completely forgotten, like it may be the turtle and nothing at all is remembered or known. And we weren't even talking about maybe it was like at the end of this life, no more thought of anyone, because no more of that person at all. But when we mention a particular name and would like that person to benefit because they may be thinking of us, it seems a little bit like it may condition more clinging to the idea that that person may still be thinking of us and this kind of thing. Is that what you think, Nina?
Yes, because as Ajahn often says, even when that person was alive, he didn't exist. And there is no Nina, there is no Lodewijk. So you always emphasize that we, when we think of a person, it is not a reality. We live alone, you always say.
All the time?
Well, not really, but when there is right understanding.
Is there no moment of thinking about reality as a person?
Yes.
But I think the point is that we need to hear a lot of reminders about realities to develop detachment from the idea of someone existing, someone that did exist, someone will exist. And when we make a point of thinking of this person who can still look after us after in the next life or appreciate it, seems to Nina that it just conditions more clinging to the idea of that person.
But not next life. If that person was born a deva, that person can appreciate. But we don't know about the clinging, still keep on having clinging, like Sakka and his four wives. One of his wives was born as a bird, egret or something, I don't know what kind of bird is there. See?
Sakka, you mean? Sakka. Yeah.
So the ones who are reborn in the deva realms, they can remember their past lives, right?
Or beta
also.
Yeah, whatever.
So when we mention their names, they can know that we are referring to them. Okay.
Is that because of their spontaneous birth, and so can remember what happened? So we don't know, so it's just like a condition if there is reflecting or anyone who can appreciate it. Because like when we read the stories in the about the devas or the paitas and the commentaries, we read about how they all can remember details from previous life. And
for health, it's not spontaneous rebirth.
The paitas, I think, the ghost.
Paita and devas,
yes.
So if reborn as a human, he would not be possible.
So getting back to Nina's concern, I think the point is that it is kusala on our part to think of sharing the merit with others. And then maybe we can say the fact that mentioning a particular aim conditions attachment or thinking in a wrong way shouldn't deter us from sharing the kusala with those who can appreciate it.
Actually, it's just like now in daily life, we may share some kusala with others and they may not appreciate it at all. They may be jealous, or they may not like it, or they may not be interested in it, or they may think it's conceit. It doesn't matter, but it's just a kind of moment of kusala intention to share kind of dana, that's all. So never mind about the response or reaction, because there's just that good intention to share for a moment.
If there is good intention, no clinging.
And in case that he would appreciate, we don't know.
Yeah, often I agree. Especially when it's the ones that we're so attached to, then there can be a lot of clinging, so wishing so much for that being to be able to appreciate. So different moments, and that's natural and good to know.
Like parents, see? Thinking of the wholesomeness of parents towards us, and it's time to share or to have kusla for them to appreciate, if they would.
Bound to be moments of attachment in between and moments of feeling unhappy, and of course just like now, just any time at all.
Because you said you spoke about parents, but one may have parents who just not interested at all in the teachings or in kusala, even, or kusala and akusala. That is more difficult. Parents to share merit, I mean.
Difficult?
well, my intention, and my intention is good, okay.
Yeah. Anyone you know?
Yeah.
Ivan, see, we can extend merit to friends, to
many friends,
anyone.
Those who have attained jhana and reborn in rupa and arupa Brahma realms, they can also remember.
Yeah, they know life. Everything.
They know everything, so yeah. Also even more than the devas and Peter.
And deva also knows everything.
Ajahn, what about sati and sammasati? Are they different?
Different levels.
Different levels.
Because at moment of understanding, the intellectual understanding, there must be sati. But it's not the direct awareness higher than ordinary or intellectual understanding.
What is a sati?
Sati is that which is aware.
Is aware what?
Okay. Would you like to give this to Queen Jonathan? What is citta at that moment? What kind of citta is there?
We don't know yet. Kusala.
Right, right, right. But you see that any moment of kusala, it's because of sati, which is aware of such kusala, so that kusala can be done. So many things to give, but you don't give. But when it's beneficial for the others, for that person who you think that will better give, then you give because of sati, not because of you.
Something. Is it because at the moment we give someone something because we want, we like the people. You mean like this?
So we've talked a lot about how in different conventional situations like giving or listening to Dharma, there are moments of kusala or akusala, so we know, and moments of just moments of attachment, no kusala, no sati. But we're just talking about when sati arises and what it is aware of. And Ajahn is saying at any moment of kusala, just beginning with moments of generosity, we don't need to think about whether we like or not, but if there's a moment of generosity, sati is aware of what is kusala. So it's kusala at that moment because sati is there. So at that moment there is sati, even though no understanding. It's just a moment of giving, no understanding, but sati is there because it's a moment of kusala. At a moment of kindness, friendliness, sati is there because it is kusala at that moment. We're not talking about, oh, how sometimes what we take for kindness is really attachment. That's another topic. But any moment of kusala, sati is there. At a moment of calmness, like we were talking about reflection on death or reflection on the virtues of Buddha, at moments of kusala, it is calm and sati must be there. And when there is understanding of what is calm, it is sati of samatha. There is a beginning of understanding what is calm at that moment. Sati is there at that moment. And then when we talk about understanding reality, like understanding seeing or hearing, it must be samasati, right awareness of the reality, which is there. Actually, any sati is sama because it's not wrong, but usually samasati is used in the context of when there is understanding of reality, even intellectually, then it is samasati at that moment, aware of that reality, like visible object now. So different levels of sati, but each moment of kusala is there.
You said samasati, even if it is intellectual understanding, but I understood samasati is only when there is direct awareness, not yet. Is that correct?
Well, it's a little bit like when one talks about the path. Actually, when there's right now intellectual understanding about what visible object or what seeing is, we can't say it is the path. We can't say it is right understanding or right awareness of the path, but it is the beginning. It is like the introduction to the path. Mm-hmm. So it's like the introduction to samasati or the development of the path.
So like pariyati.
Pariyati, yeah.
Present moment.
As is the introduction to the
introduction.
Direct understanding of realities, the introduction to satipatthana.
Yes.
Without the pariyati, without that level of sati, there cannot be the samasati with the development of satipatthana.
So, because pariyati pertains to what appears now, although it is not yet the very right. Yeah, it's the beginning. And there can be in between some moments of awareness already, even at the level when there is pariyati, not yet satchajnana, not yet firm enough.
Well, there has to be awareness, and it is right awareness because it is the right awareness of realities which leads to the path, which leads to the direct understanding. And by becoming firmer and firmer, it becomes the satchajnana, the very firm intellectual understanding of reality.
Yes.
With
yeah.
The very firm sati that without any doubt about what is the right way, the right path, and this is what leads to the direct awareness of realities, the direct understanding of realities. So it is
yes.
The precursor, it is
yeah.
The...
And it is developing, so we cannot really pinpoint this moment or that moment.
And of course, and if there's any trying, it's the wrong way again. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So no need to even think about it or be concerned. Just let it perform its task very naturally. No need to try to work it out. Is this firm or is this not firm? Or should there be more? Because then it's all back to me and my understanding again. So just forget about the trying to work it out and just let it develop naturally. I want to know when you were stuck and missed your flight, whether you had any helpful Dharma reflections in KL. Mai, any useful discussion in when you missed the flight?
Let's have a... Thumbek usually remind us about the uncontrollable and nothing's as a beautiful plan as we think before.
Nothing's beautiful thing.
As you recommend on your email, that nothing can like a beautiful blend that we have.
Yes, I just mentioned.
Because I don't know the context.
I just mentioned briefly when Hearn's plans all got mixed up, and how when these girls missed their flight, how we make all these beautiful plans and arrangements, but anything can happen anytime, just as Tom said, by because of anatta and uncontrollable. So we have our beautiful plans and we think we know how dharmas will go, but actually no idea, like even next moment, no idea whether there will be seeing of a beautiful object or being bitten by a mosquito, or anything can happen any moment. It's true. And any other discussions, Han?
Yes, so that also reminds us when we come back from the waiting room to back to the immigration gate from checking and buy a ticket again. So we feel tired. And she said that although it's tired, but we have to go through. So how about samsara when we die and rebirth again? So do you feel tired?
Can you explain a little bit more, in a little more detail for Nina?
No, because when you feel very tired, when we have to come back again to the immigration gate and buy buy a ticket again and arrange somewhere to stay, so it's very tired and don't want to do. So Tambak just said, do you feel tired when we are still in samsara? Have to
keep being reborn.
Yes, reborn again and again. Yes. So I said that still lying.
Yes. That's what this Gabi in the beginning of our talk, I have talked about a cycle of rebirths, that there's always again cheetah again falling away. And she said to us, there is nothing and then there is something and then there is nothing. And it seems so pointless to cling what falls away immediately. You remember? Yeah.
And when life doesn't go according to our beautiful plans and dreams and it seems so tiring, and of course we know what is most tiring of all. Actually, it's just the kalesa that are so tired, the dosa and the...
and what is the most valuable? Only panya, or understanding and developing understanding of this moment, is the most valuable. So everything else is really nothing.
Well, any hunger now? Your topic?
I'm a good listener.
I think at lunchtime you are having a discussion about hunger, and we were talking about how actually when there really is a feeling of hunger, it's this bodily experience accompanied by painful bodily feeling at that moment, experiencing the tangible object. But actually the moment of the bodily experience is just one cheetah, and then fallen away instantly. And then usually even in the sense door process and then in countless mind door processes, so many cheetahs with dosa or with attachment. So we think the problem is the hunger, the bodily experience, but actually, just like in this or any other occasion, the real problem is usually the thinking with dosa afterwards because of the attachment to having pleasant feeling.
No, I think you covered it pretty much. And then there's times when we think, well, except for there are times when we think we're hungry, which may not be prompted by any tangible feeling, but prompted by, you know, you see a beautiful cake or a bowl of fruit and conditions thinking about it. You know what? It's the lopa, I want it, where there may not be any physical hunger. Oh, I think sometimes we trick ourselves.
I think think sometimes we say I'm hungry, but actually it may just be that I'm a bit bored and I can see the food, or it's close to lunchtime, but sometimes we eat when we're not hungry at all. So,
can anyone deceive oneself?
Can anyone, I didn't hear.
Deceive oneself.
Well, I don't think. Yes. The self doesn't deceive oneself,
you know,
though. The akusala cittas.
You know. So it's not deceive, because you know.
Oh, I think there can be enough lopa sometimes.
Yes, but you know that it's because of lopa.
I may not think about that at the time. Those thoughts may not arise. If there's no understanding of any level that arises at that time.
When we use the word deceive, what do you mean?
We think that we're actually hungry.
At that very moment?
No, just a minute. At what very moment?
So one cannot deceive oneself. Can one?
I'm not
because
sure.
Because at that moment
of deceit
thinking,
is an intentional wrong. But what you're saying is that I think it's more
tricked.
Like ignorance or...
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
I think we know when we eat because we are hungry and when we eat because we like it. It's not the same conditions.
No, it's not the same conditions, but I think there's so much ignorance that we don't know the difference.
And they can get mixed up too, moments of actually feeling a bit hungry and moments of attachment and eating a lot and saying, oh, I'm so hungry, but actually a lot of it is just the attachment to the taste. And
yes.
But when one says that I deceive myself, it means that you know the truth. What is the truth?
I understand where you're coming from. But you have to know that there has to be understanding of the truth. Otherwise, you can't do it. Yeah.
Of not knowing, it can't be.
It can't be deceit, I guess. I see your point.
That's why it says that no one can lie to oneself.
Cannot lie to oneself and cannot kill to oneself and cannot steal to oneself. And has to be the other.
Because always thinking about I. It is correct?
There is always thinking about I, but the reason that one cannot lie to oneself or steal to oneself or steal from oneself is because, well, to give that example, like if I take this pen, actually it's mine anyway, so I cannot steal from myself, and I cannot lie to myself because I know that it's not correct. And kill to oneself cannot, so it has to be another.
So when you say cannot kill to oneself, you mean that suicide is not considered killing?
Because the conditions for killing is it has to be another's life, taking the life of another being. And one has to have that intention to take the other life, and that life has to. So when it's taking one's own life, it's strong akusala cittas, but it's not the killing, which is the taking of the life of another being, which is the kamapata that will bring the result.
So all the
precepts relate to the harming of another or other beings.
Except the drinking alcohol and intoxicants.
because it is the condition for the harming of others. So it's still related to the harming of others, and that's why Sotapanna, the one who has eradicated wrong view, will not have a kusala to that degree of harming others, and will not even drink or take intoxicants.
And what is considered alcohol and intoxicants? Any specifications about that?
I think it's that which is deliberately taken in order to intoxicate, and it's the intoxication when a particular kind of intoxication, so it's not talking about a little bit of alcohol in the Christmas pudding or something. It's when it is the intention to deliberately intoxicate. Anything else, Ajahn?
It's harmful, like other things, like lopa, ignorance. As long as it doesn't harm the other, it's not violating or sila, breaking sila. When we talk about sila, it means that citta at that moment is kusala or akusala.
If someone takes beer, would that be a breach of the fifth precept?
For what?
Regularly, on a regularly basis.
For what?
To feel pleasant, because he likes the taste.
Like at a drink?
Like eating a cake, for example.
So it's just a drink. When you take it as a drink, it's a drink.
Yes, it's a drink.
Yeah.
I didn't get it yet.
She's saying, it's just a drink.
Okay.
I think often it may be taken as just a drink, but maybe then it's a little more and a little more, and often there's no realization of how actually it affects others, like it can lead to bad speech or bad manners, which is harmful to others, but there may not be any knowing of it.
So who will not take intoxicant?
At all? Sotapanna?
Not at all. Who will not take intoxicant?
The one who sees the harmness or the danger of it.
The danger of that accumulated tendency and leading to the harm of our
points.
So,
if there would be the question, so that Sotapanna can drink as a drink, or what?
It's the question.
You would like her to, it would like you to ask her. She's prompting your next question.
To answer.
Yeah.
I would guess no. Yes. Like even ordinary people, when they take the teaching seriously, I cannot say for all, but I think I see that most people I know who take the teaching seriously, they can see the danger of accumulating that tendency. So they don't think that it's worth having some pleasures to accumulate a tendency that can be harmful in future lives.
There must be a reason to take or not to take.
Single reason. I think she's saying for each person there's a reason why they take or don't take.
Even for a monk, when it's medicine, it's allowed, but not like drink with pleasure. like taking medicine. But it has to be only as medicine.
I can't take it even as medicine.
You don't know, because sometimes it's in the medicine.
I know. Last time, about 5 years ago, I had a very bad cough, or I forget what it was, and I was given a little tincture of medicine in Australia and told to have 2 tablespoons, and I had 1 tablespoon and collapsed because it had alcohol, and it just, because I haven't drunk alcohol for so many decades, and it just totally had such a strong effect, and it was like I couldn't get rid of that taste for the rest of the day. So I know for me, I will, even as a medicine, I will avoid it because such a strong effect.
I thought for monks it has to be cooked and cooked so much that there is no more the taste of alcohol in the medicine. There's a special details on the rule.
Yeah, all the time, so that
intoxicating effect or taste.
Well, actually, there's so
little awareness or a little understanding in a day, so why make it so much harder? And just a little taste can make it. I remember, because actually I gave up alcohol even before I became interested in Buddhism, because I realized that just a little led to akusala speech, or it didn't have good effect at all.
Another
topic of Hung's that you said this morning you would like to discuss about, and that was about the 4 rupas. Yes, would you like to mention?
I would like to know about 4 rupas. For example, harness softness, hot and cold, and visible object,
motion
and pressure. This can be known by citta, and this is the rupa that cannot be known, that cannot be experienced. How about if we, how about water?
Cohesion, you mean? It cannot be object of citta, the body consciousness. Because whenever there is touching, what appears is only hardness or softness, heat and cold, and then pressure and motion. It's not the word, but it's the moment of touching.
For example, Hung, even at this moment of touching the water, what is actually experienced at that moment is coolness, or softness, or motion only. Thinking about touching water, but actually only softness or coolness touched at that moment. What do you think?
Yes, yes. I am. If I say about reality, about experience, rupas, that cannot be experienced, but the citta can be known directly, rupas. For example, harness, when...
Right now, what is experienced when there is touching?
Right now,
when there is touching, what appears?
The harness,
mm-hmm.
And
is it
softness.
You? Is it you? Or is it yours?
No.
So, what is it?
just the robots.
A reality.
Yeah.
Do you own it?
No. Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Because it's the element. This not belong to who, to someone. It's gone. The nature.
It's gone completely.
Yeah.
So how can one think that one owns mm-hmm. such reality when it's gone completely?
But if Panya development every moment and can be known directly for primary like hit call harness subnet motion register and later on Panya can understand about water is can be known by mind, not by the five senses. It is correct.
In the day, there are many moments of touching, but no understanding of whatever is there, whether it's the reality which touches or that which is touched at all. That's why we listen to the teachings of the Buddha, because he talks about the absolute reality which is there, but it cannot be known without the experiencing, the reality which can experience it. That's why at moment of touching, it's not I who touch, or the object is something like table and things, but actually it's only hardness which is touched, and no one touch except the reality which can experience hardness through body sense.
If I say my understanding about four primary can understand by directly like Ajahn talk about Panya can know, no one can know, only Panya develop Panya. But I have an experience before. I really no doubt if now the reality hitter or harness arises at the moment, Panya can understand no doubt. How about?
I think we need to come back again to the careful considering, because it seems that there's no doubt and it can be direct understanding at this moment. But, for example, what exactly is touched now? Is it hardness, softness, or what, or what? So only when it's very, very clear, very firm intellectual understanding that actually just tangible object is touched, hardness, softness, motion, heat, cold, only a moment of touching, and no one there ever, no practice of any kind whatsoever, whether it's samatha or anything else, only when it's so firm can there actually be any direct understanding. So of course there's bound to be moments of doubt, or what exactly is touched now, or what exactly is sila, or can it be practiced? So let's just be content to really understand clearer and clearer what is real at this moment, and understand that, not think about direct understanding or rising and falling away or vipassana jnanas. Let's just get it very clear what is dharma now, what is paramatta dharma at this moment, to really get rid of any idea of I can do anything or anyone can practice anything, even if it's the other people or those who follow samatha. Because only by really understanding clearly what is dharma now will there be the end of all those ideas of doing sila or practicing samatha or
someone following some special way. So back to now and just what is real. It's enough. No need to think that there's any shortcut or quick way to develop understanding.
If I say about I can directly understand about Rupert, it means in orange. It means in orange, at the moment in orange.
Yeah, because it's not understanding the real depth of ignorance at this moment. Like if it seems clear that there is concentration now or sanya at this moment, actually it's thinking about it. And like we were saying before, even in a Dharma discussion, even while talking about how sanya and ikagata arise with seeing, they can be thinking about it with kusala citta or with ignorance. Sometimes we may just repeat the words but not really understand anything. So it's good to understand, as Nina always reminds us, what beginners we are, how little is really known. Would you like to repeat that, Nina?
Well, it's not so difficult to realize how little we know, because we listen to Ajahn and then we realize how little we really understand. We have to be reminded all the time by listening and considering, and it never is enough.
When I heard Chambers talk about the light and the darkness, and thinking about a blind man and the deva in the, not the deva, Arupa Pompum in Arupa, and then thinking about a word, just as John says, understand the word. What is light? Light, one rupa, just a upataya rupa in Mahabhuta rupa. And what is darkness? It rupa? If it's rupa, it's still light, but no light. It's still like a one rupa in the upataya rupa, in a weak quarter rupa, eight, right? But the meaning that talking about the light and darkness is compared to nama tam, like a jit and jetasik. And I just talk about the jit jetasik. Only the, even the seeing or the chakuvinyan is, it's not light, it's not rupa. It's just a nama. The nama is a nama, it's no rupa. That the way that I'm thinking about that, but I don't know exactly what the meaning of the Tampas arc for understand something. I would like to ask the Tampas to explain more what you really are the question and what is the point of that light and the darkness.
You mean you want to me to share about what I understood from that conversation, or what that is?
Yeah, every time that John said we talk the word, we should know what is the word is, what is light, what is darkness. Light is a rupa, or darkness is a rupa.
Yes, actually, now as I listen to you, I have another question to Ajahn.
Other question. Are you suggesting that darkness is a rupa?
I just asked.
Okay, I'm just asking you, is darkness a rupa?
One, this is a word, to understand the word. What is the meaning exactly of the word that's trying to understand that? If the darkness is trying to ask what is the rupa, if it's rupa, it means light, but it's no light, little light. It'll have some kind.
If there's no light, if it's dark, it just means that visible object doesn't appear, no light appears. It doesn't mean there's another rupa of darkness. It doesn't mean
there's... I understand that.
It's exactly
to the point. The point, I understand that. We talk about the rupa and citta and Jessica. It's different, right? Even the seeing it's not rupa. But we talk light, light is rupa, right? When the tambas ask about the light and darkness, dark, that I try to thinking about that. Because thinking to understand that, what a question, the question try to understand what?
Light is rupa, which rupa?
Rupa, I mean the one rupa, not aloka. I mean pardon me?
Visible object.
Visible object.
Visible
yes.
Object. That's
yes.
Yeah, so that's what we mean by light, visible object.
Yes, not aloka. I mean.
So okay. What's your question then?
The question is trying to Thomas just said, don't want to take about, not have a topic. That's why I think about the topic that Thomas says about the light and darkness and other question.
Another question is, what is aloka?
Aloka is light. In understanding, but I miss the words that aloka is a light. It's some kind of light. It's some kind of rupa. It's a light. Aloka. Aloka.
It's a concept. Yes, it's not a reality that can be directly experienced. Is it not in meditation, jhana, or something, a subject of samatha?
You mean aloka is panati? It is the object of jhana or samatha?
I don't know much about it, but I've heard something.